This is Pittsburgh Explainer from 90.5 WESA. Every week, we help you catch up on the headlines from southwestern Pennsylvania. It's Friday, December 18th. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Liz Reed. So there. Woo-hoo! Cheers erupted as UPMC nurse practitioner Charmaine Pykosh became the first person in Allegheny County to receive the COVID-19 vaccine Monday. Similar scenes played out across the country, just days after the U.S. Food and Drug Administration gave emergency authorization to the vaccine, developed by Pfizer and the German company BioNTech. As I absorbed this news Monday morning, it felt like one of those "where were you" moments, like 9/11 or the JFK assassination. Except this time, the tears pooling at the corners of my eyes were ones of joy and relief, not sorrow and grief. Here's how Dr. Deborah Bogan put it. She's Allegheny County's Health Department Director.
This is the beginning of the end of the pandemic and a bright light at the end of this long, dark tunnel.
WESA's Sarah Bowden and Kylie Kaczynski have been covering the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine this week. Thanks to you both for being here.
Hey, Liz.
Thanks, Liz.
Kylie, you were watching the live stream of these UPMC employees getting immunized. How did UPMC decide who would get the vaccine first?
So they didn't say how these five employees were selected exactly. They did say that they were chosen to sort of show the wide range of people under the essential healthcare worker umbrella. One was a nurse, one was a nurse practitioner, a physician, a transporter, and one was an environmental services supervisor. Charmaine Pykosh, the nurse practitioner, said she was selected out of a group of her colleagues voted for her to get the opportunity. So we do know that that's how she was selected.
Now, UPMC is the largest non-governmental employer in the state. They employ about 18,000 nurses and 5,000 doctors. And then, of course, there's thousands of other people in patient-facing roles like physicians, assistants, respiratory therapists, stuff like that. What are the logistical challenges that come along with inoculating this many healthcare workers?
Well, first of all, each person that gets the Pfizer vaccine as part of this first shipment will need to do a second vaccine in 21 days. So that's something to keep in mind. We've heard about these super cold storage freezers needed to store the vaccine, but UPMC has said repeatedly they have enough of those. They decided to prioritize workers on COVID units and those with underlying health conditions first before they'll move on to other departments and units. I should note, though, that the vaccine will not be mandatory for all UPMC workers, which is different from their policy for the flu vaccine. UPMC's Medical Director of Infection Prevention and Hospital Epidemiology, Dr. Graham Snyder, said that the flu vaccine has considerably more history of efficacy and has obviously been studied more than the COVID-19 vaccine. But he did say anecdotally that it seemed like the majority of workers are interested in getting this vaccine.
Sarah, beyond healthcare workers, which Pennsylvanians are going to be prioritized for vaccination?
So the state has this phase plan based on CDC guidance, and it is broken up into three phases, 1, 2, and 3. But within each phase, there are furthered tiered categories on how people are going to be prioritized. For example, healthcare workers, along with people who live in long-term care facilities like nursing homes, will be the very first to get vaccinated. That's followed by first responders and people who work in adult and child protective services. After that, then we're going to see people in different essential roles, like people in agriculture, manufacturing of certain products like PPE, teachers. But when you look at phase B of the first phase of vaccine rollout, the categories are very vast, and it's not clear to me how everyone within phase 1B will be prioritized and ordered. So that's something I would really love some insight from the state.
Sarah, you mentioned people in long-term care facilities. I'm curious about other congregate settings, such as jails and prisons or homeless shelters?
Actually, I can answer that. So homeless and homeless shelter employees, as well as employees at correctional facilities and those incarcerated there, are both listed under this very large phase 1B of the vaccination strategy. So they're categorized with essential business personnel who can't work from home, people that work at places like food processing facilities, PPE manufacturers, etc. Pennsylvania Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine said Thursday that the length of time it takes to get to these people in phase 1B or even the later phases, is dependent on cooperation with the federal government's Operation Warp Speed and the output by vaccine distributors. So we don't know exactly when we will reach these populations. And as of right now, we also don't know how the vaccine will be distributed. Is it a matter of homeless shelters applying for an allotment of vaccines? Will jails have to have proper medical facilities to be able to inoculate the populations there? Those are still outstanding questions.
I'm also curious, too, because these are can be like transient sort of settings. So if someone gets their first vaccine, you know, through a homeless shelter or in a jail, but they're not there 3 weeks later, like, how does that work?
That's a great question. It's also one we don't have the answer to yet. There are a number of good outreach groups that work with people who live on the street that perhaps could sort of monitor that, but it wouldn't be as effective as, you know, residents in a nursing home where you could very closely monitor how they get vaccinated.
Okay. Sarah, so what about people who aren't particularly at risk? People like you and I who can work from home, don't have underlying conditions, aren't over age 65. When might those folks get vaccinated?
On Thursday, Dr. Levine said that it's looking like late spring or maybe early summer. It all depends on how quickly vaccine makers can manufacture vaccine. According to a New York Times article, there will be something like 22.5 million doses of both the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine combined by the end of January, which is like less than 7% of the entire U.S. population. It's not clear to me how quickly these vaccines are being produced on either a weekly or a monthly basis. However, something to remember is that Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca also have vaccines in development. So as those are hopefully eventually approved, that will help boost the amount of vaccine we have to distribute.
So this group of healthcare workers that's already getting vaccinated, once they get this second dose 3 weeks from now, like, does that mean they can stop social distancing? They can stop wearing a mask? Like,
absolutely not.
So how does that work?
Yeah, and they know that too. Healthcare workers are aware that they have to keep social distancing and wearing a mask. And this is because we don't know actually if the vaccine prevents asymptomatic infections or if it just prevents severe illness. So basically what that means is, does the vaccine stop people from getting infected totally or just stop people from getting ill?
So I may not be sick, but I still might carry the disease to the next person.
We just don't know because the data isn't there yet. However, Moderna did come out with some very promising preliminary data to suggest that its vaccine does prevent asymptomatic infections. But again, this is preliminary data, so we got to wait and see.
How about pregnant women? Are they going to be able to take this vaccine?
Both the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists say pregnant people, lactating people, they can get the vaccine if they want. Now, this population was not included in vaccine trials. However, it is my understanding that while some vaccines do present health risks to pregnant people, mRNA vaccines, which includes Pfizer and Moderna, do not present these risks. So theoretically, based on what we know about the science, it should be fine for them to get the vaccine.
And just to clarify for people, the mRNA vaccine means it's not the whole coronavirus that they're using. It's a slice of the genetic material, right?
Right, exactly. It's a newer technology. It's been around for a while, but never used in a vaccine before. It's pretty exciting because it's less expensive to produce and less labor intensive to produce, which is part of the reason that the vaccine has come out so quickly.
Now, some people are skeptical of this vaccine. They worry, these vaccines, they worry they were developed too quickly or that they're going to actually get COVID from them. What would you say to those folks?
I mean, it is true that these vaccines were developed incredibly fast, but that's basically because everything broke in favor of the vaccine's development, in addition to the fact that these vaccines are less labor-intensive and less expensive to produce. A crazy amount of money was thrown at vaccine development. Everyone from the federal government to Bill Gates to Dolly Parton was just like, here, take all the money. And then regulatory roadblocks were also removed, so that's important. Also, in some ways, we're lucky that it was a coronavirus that caused this pandemic. Early in the 2000s, we had a SARS epidemic along with the MERS outbreak, and both of those are types of coronaviruses that are related to SARS-CoV-2, which is the coronavirus that is currently ruining everyone's life. And while vaccines for these viruses never made it to market, previous work on them provided researchers with a good base for developing Pfizer and Moderna and the other vaccines that are hopefully coming out soon. Also, there's the fact that unlike some viruses like HIV, the coronavirus doesn't mutate very fast. And unlike HIV, our body has a natural immune response to a coronavirus infection. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel when it comes to our coronavirus vaccine. We're just trying to give our bodies a head start to recognize the infection. So when the virus does show up, the body knows, oh, I've seen you before. Get out of here. I'm going to destroy you.
So just because some people may have an immune response because their body is reacting to the genetic material in the vaccine, that doesn't mean you can get COVID-19 from it, right?
No, you can't get COVID-19 from the vaccine because you're only getting a small portion of the virus and not the entire virus. So it's just not possible. It's not possible to get COVID-19. It's not possible to get coronavirus from an mRNA vaccine.
I talked at the top a little bit about sort of how I felt learning that these vaccinations were rolling out. Kylie, you were watching the UPMC live stream on Monday. Like, what was that like for you?
At first, I had a moment where I sort of zoomed out and thought about how bizarre it is to watch five total strangers get vaccinated on a live stream. But seeing this and seeing the relief wash over some of these workers was maybe the first bit of hope I've felt covering this pandemic since it began. So it really, it was emotional. I think that's a good word to describe it.
Yeah, I actually teared up watching the live stream from my apartment. I felt an incredible sense of relief and hope. And I feel really grateful that we've made it to this moment.
Thanks to you both. I'm not going to cry. Okay. Let me try that again. Thanks to both of you for your coverage, for being on the show. And I'm really, really looking forward to working in the same building with you again.
I can't wait to give you guys some hugs. I'm very excited about that.
I will be counting down the days.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
It's time for a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Kevin Gavin. The 44th annual Christmas All Request Show is set for Wednesday, December 23rd. Like so many things this year, it'll be a bit different. All requests must be submitted by December 18th. You can make your request and dedication by going to wesa.fm/request or call 412-697-2948 and record your name, request, and a dedication. So make your request and tune in December 23rd from noon to 4 on 90.5 WESA.
It's been 5 years since 200 people in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania learned they'd have to move out of their apartment complex to make way for new development. Maybe you've heard stories like this before, about people being pushed out of neighborhoods they've called home for years.
We felt that the neighbors, we were being pulled apart.
About government officials leaping into the fray.
This is not gray. This is black and white.
About how cities try to balance growth and equity.
For who? Who are you making it better for? You ain't making it better for me.
But what happened in Pittsburgh in 2015 wasn't the problem. It was the symptom.
If we're going to really embrace equity in this region, it is going to take a pretty seismic shift in the way that we are thinking.
WESA's new podcast, Land and Power, explores how one place becomes another and what that means for the people who used to call it home. Listen wherever you get your podcasts or at landandpowerpod.com.
If you're a parent, one of the things you're probably most anxious for is the safe return of in-person instruction at school. Schools are vital to how our society functions, and without them, parents have been cobbling together childcare, trying to work remotely while also helping their kids learn remotely, and some people, particularly women, have quit the workforce altogether. If this vaccine is the beginning of the end of the pandemic, what does that mean for our children and their return to the classroom? Keystone Crossroads' Avi Wolfman-Arendt posed just that question this week and is here to explain what he learned. Avi, welcome back to Explainer.
Thanks for having me, Liz.
The vaccines we're currently talking about, the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, others, these are for adults. So clearly school staff are going to be vaccinated first. Where are teachers in this vaccine prioritization line?
So teachers are basically in the second tranche. So like the first phase is going to be, you know, as you've been hearing about, healthcare workers or on the front lines and people living in congregate care facilities and people working in congregate care facilities. Then you have this huge group of people in phase two who are people who are high risk medically and people who are critical workers. And the CDC recommendations, and which Pennsylvania is following, put teachers and school staff who work directly with kids in that second phase group. But it's a huge group. There's, I think, nationwide about 87 million people in that group. So we don't have any specificity around, like, will teachers be prioritized in some way within that group? Will it be a free-for-all? I don't know that yet, but I know that they're going to be in that wave before the general public.
So if we've been hearing that the general public may start to get vaccinated sometime in what, the spring, summer, we're looking to see teachers just a bit above that curve, I guess?
Exactly. So recently, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and admittedly he was giving a rough guess, was thinking that general public might start to get access late March, early April. And if you kind of, you know, do a little subtraction, right, then you can imagine if that timeline holds, maybe school staff are getting the vaccine in mid-March, early March, late February, something in that range. But again, it's all, these are like moving targets at this point, and it's all going to be based on how smoothly the rollout of these vaccines go.
What about kids? When will we see a vaccine for them?
So that's even harder to tell. I've heard some general estimates of mid-2021, but that's like rough, right? And so right now, the vaccine that's approved, the Pfizer vaccine, is, you know, basically 16 and up. So that's not capturing most of your K-12 students. And the issue is that basically, they haven't, like, they don't have enough kids in the sample to know, like, is it safe for kids? And so they have to do that, and then they have to go through the regulatory process, right? And then they have to figure out distribution for kids. So it's far off. I think the lack of clarity is such that I don't think we can really know yet whether kids would be vaccinated before schools open next fall or not.
That sort of brings me to my next question. Like, do all the kids need to be vaccinated before schools can go back to normal? I mean, we know kids can spread COVID-19, but they don't tend to get as sick as adults.
Before we go back to normal, probably yes. You know, normal is a ways off. I think the most likely scenario is that we know there's going to be this gap, right, between when school staff get it and when kids get the vaccine. And so the question, the next phase of this whole conversation is like, okay, so how safe is school in that scenario? You know, you do have potential transmitters in the building, and not all teachers are going to be immunized because we know that the vaccine is not 100% effective. So even some of the people who get the vaccine are not going to be protected from the disease. And, you know, generally, there's always going to be some people who just can't get the vaccine for some medical reason. And so you could have still vulnerable people in these buildings, older people. And so you probably still need to do, you know, masking and distancing. I think the question is, you know, do you have to do it as strictly as you're doing it now? And, you know, will we sort of be shifting toward normal? I don't think we're going to be back to normal. I mean, I think what we could probably say is that this is going to move the conversation toward reopening forward. And I think my guess is that a lot of parents, once teachers are vaccinated, a lot of parents will say, like, I at least want the option. Because right now, a lot of districts in Pennsylvania are not giving the option of in-person learning, even in like twice a week or something like that. It's all online. So I think you're going to be moving toward at least having that option available. Now, there'll still be opposition potentially. Teachers unions are not going to just say, all right, our members are vaccinated, or most of them are vaccinated. Yes, we're going back. You can do whatever. We can be in a cramped classroom. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. I think unions are still going to demand certain health precautions and guardrails. Okay, so that's a huge part of this conversation. But obviously, this is so complicated, and we don't exactly know what those negotiations will be like. And here's another factor. We don't know if school teachers are going to want to get the vaccine, right? Some of them might not. We know some people are vaccine skeptics, even anti-vaccine. So that's going to complicate things too. And you might have to go through union bargaining to talk about, to negotiate what are the conditions of sort of employment and showing up. Do you have to show up if you don't want to get the vaccine? You know, all of these things could be on the table. And I know this conversation really right now is a lot of, well, this could happen and this could happen. But that's the truth, right? There's a million different scenarios. And that's been the truth since the beginning of this.
Avi, thanks so much for helping to untangle some of this for us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Liz.
That's Pittsburgh Explainer for this week. Our show is produced by Katie Blackley. Larkin Page Jacobs is our managing editor. You can find all of our news coverage at our website, wesa.fm, and of course on the air at 90.5 FM. I'm your host, Liz Reed. Thanks for listening. Let's talk next week.